Now we're holding on page 90 in Baba Basra. Four lines from the top, middle of Ois Ches. We've been talking about the mitzvah of tzedakah and the gavoy tzedakah, and we said that they're even entitled to force people sometimes to give tzedakah. So now the Gemara talks about, let's talk about the greatness of people of gavoy tzedakah and other people who do things for the community in various roles. The pasuk says in Daniel, talking about la'asid lava, it says v'hamaskilim. The whole pasuk goes v'hamaskilim yashiru kezoyha harakia. Those who are understanding will shine like the brightness of the sky. And the pasuk continues matzdikeh rabim kakechavim. Those who bring righteousness to the many kakechavim la'olam vod will be like stars forever and ever. So in context, the pasuk is talking about after the Daniel has spent quite a bit of time talking about the various kingdoms that are going to rule over the Jewish people and all the hardships they're going to cause them. And there's going to come a point when there's going to be a great danger for the Jewish people. And v'ha'kol ha'nimsa kosev v'sefer, everybody who's written in Hashem's book will be alive. And then comes tchias ha'mesim, and then comes this pasuk. So the Gemara explains. Let's explain what each of those, who are the maskilim and who are the matzdikeh harabim. V'amaskilim yazhiru kizoya harakia, what it says, those who understand, or those who bring understanding, will shine like the radiance of the sky, that dayan shadun din emes la'amitay. This refers to a dayan, not a beis din, who judges din emes la'amitay, an absolutely true judgment. Now, the Gemara uses this expression. The Gemara uses this expression din emes la'amitay in a number of places in Shas and Tosfos here, and in some of those other places, explains why do we need din emes la'amitay. Din emes would be quite enough. What it means is like this. Tosfos says sometimes you might have, let's say, so a dayan or a group of dayanim, a beis din, are judging a case. Adim come and testify such and such, ruin borrowed from Shimon, or whatever the exact thing is that they're saying. The Rav, sometimes the dayanim, may realize that there's something fishy over here. There's something in the Adim's testimony that seems to not quite add up. So he might say to himself, well, you know, well, big deal. It's not my problem. If they're going to testify falsely, then the onus will be on them. I'll go according to they testified such and such. So then, fine. I'm just going to take it as given. Of course, we have to cross-examine them, make sure that their testimony is not self-contradictory or whatever. But as long as it checks out, even though I may have like a gut feeling that they're not telling the truth, I don't have to investigate any further. So it would be a din emes because he's following what the black letter law of Shulchan Aruch. But it's not din emes la'amitay. Din emes la'amitay, which means he's going to try to figure this out. He's going to try to get to the bottom of this and expose the Edim as liars. And there are many stories of Gdolei Yisrael who do just that, who realize that there's something that doesn't quite add up, and they start checking into it and then investigating further, and they find out the absolute truth. That's din emes la'amitay. There are other explanations as well. Marsha brings over here from the Beis Yosef on tour, who gives another meaning of it as well. You might have a dayan who is tacit judging according to Shulchan Aruch. But it might be, for example, that he has a certain bias. He likes one particular person better than the other, let's say. So not so blatantly that he'd have to recuse himself as a dayan, but nevertheless So you might have, he's judging, the fact is, according to Shulchan Aruch, Reuven owes this money to Shimon, or whatever it is. But if it also comes into that, in addition, he also likes Shimon and doesn't really like Reuven, then it's not emes la'amitay. So only when he's completely disinterested and unbiased. And then there's different other... Marshall has some questions about that and says that it doesn't fit with certain other Gemaras that talk about this. But Abbas Eisan here on the side of the page, and also the Jerusha and Shulchan Aruch, bring yet another possibility. Sometimes we know that Beis Din is sometimes allowed to go, we learned about it in Bava Metzia, for example, you have the concept of Lefnim Meshuras Adin. And sometimes Beis Din will have to do that. Sometimes they will have to decide a case where, even though technically the halacha is such and such, nevertheless they may have to go beyond what halacha says because of unique circumstances that apply in their time and place in order to get people to be more careful with certain mitzvahs or whatever, or avedus or whatever it is. So that would also be din emes la'amitay, where they do it not just following black letter halacha, but also considering the actual emes of the emes of Torah that they need to inculcate among the people. So that's another point as well. Why are we comparing them to the sky? Marsha points out that, first of all, like this, the sky, now we have different, we see the sky different colors at different times, but in truth, its real color is like the color of sapphire, which in turn resembles the kisei HaKavod. That's what the Gemara tells us in Cholin. That's the reason. That's the reason why the Eibishter gave us tchelas that we're supposed to wear in our tzitzis, because eventually it'll focus a person's attention. The tchelas resembles the sea, which in turn resembles the sky, etc., and that'll put him in mind of the kisei HaKavod. So now, in the same way as Tosfos is saying, the Dayan, if he's just judging Din Emes without the La'amitoi part, so again, you might have, because of the way the Edom are twisting things and pretending as though they're telling the truth, so again, a Dayan who's not done it in Din Emes La'amitoi might go along with that and not try to ferret it out further. So in that case, he's not getting to the true matter of the Din, which is comparable then to looking at the sky and not perceiving the true color of it. As opposed to when he does Din Emes La'amitoi, then he realizes the true color of it, and he realizes that Hashem's throne is a throne of justice, and he has to be like Hashem, Hashem Yirah Lalevav, and he, as a Dayan, is responsible as much as possible to try to match that absolute Emes and to look into their hearts as well. So that's one reason. Different Mephoshim talk about different other points over here. The Ritva, that's quoted over here on the page, says, also this comparison to the Rakia, the point is that Hashem's throne, which again, the sky resembles in color, is that Hashem's throne is established on Tzedakah and Mishpat. So when he's doing Mishpat properly, then he's helping establish Hashem's throne, and therefore he's compared to the sky, which is also described as Hashem's throne, and which is the color of Hashem's throne. You have different other points as well. Ion Yaakov makes a point over here. We don't necessarily mean the sky that we see. We mean the sky, the heaven above the heads of the Chayas HaKodesh. Which the Gemara tells us in Chagiga, up to that point, when you're talking about the Olam HaSel Yodim, you can delve into it and try to understand what's going on over there. Higher than that is already Lifnat Simtzum or whatever it is exactly, and you don't really have the ability to go and investigate into that. The same way that a Dayan that's done Din Emes La'amitoi, don't start investigating and second guessing him, because there comes a point you have to trust that he knows what he's doing, because he's tackle working on doing Din Emes La'amitoi. And then there's different other points about what exactly is the comparison between a judge who judges truthfully and the Zohar HaRakia and this glow of the sky. When the pasuk continues then in Daniel, that those who bring righteousness to the many will be like the stars forever and ever. That means Elu Gaboi Tzedakah, that refers to the Gaboi Tzedakah, because they're the ones who bring Tzedakah to the many by collecting Tzedakah, and they're therefore enabling many people to do the mitzvah, and even as we learned yesterday, even sometimes forcing them to give Tzedakah. The comparison to stars, Marsha explains, the stars are there all the time, 24 hours a day, but you only see them at night. The same way the Gaboi Tzedakah are involved in, they're looking after what the poor people need all the time, day and night. But when do they give out the Tzedakah? Davka at night. So that they're not embarrassing the poor people, because they give them by day, then everybody can see, and they're going to get embarrassed. So therefore, so that's a reason for them to be compared to stars. So therefore they're compared to stars. B'masnisatana, now in a braisa we learn differently. Both the dayanim and the gaboi tzedakah are both compared, according to the braisa, to the glow of the sky. And in that case, then, the idea is they would be part of hamaskilim. So the dayanim are called hamaskilim because, again, they carefully think into the case to decide who's right and who's wrong and to do din emes la'amitoi. According to that way of looking at it, the gaboi tzedakah are also called maskilim because Rashi says, like you have ashe maskil adol, as the pasuk says, happy is the person, fortunate is the person who thinks carefully about the poor and thinks exactly what they need and how to best be able to help them. So therefore, the Gaboi Tzedakah, according to that, are in that category. The Ritva points out, again, Hashem's throne is established on Tzedakah and on Mishpat, so therefore we have the Dayan and the Gaboi Tzedakah are doing those respectively, Mishpat and Tzedakah. Marsha says, the same way as the Dayan needs to check out and do Din Emes La'amitoi, the same way the Gaboi Tzedakah needs to. Sometimes you have fakers, like we talked about yesterday, who pretend to be poor when really they're rich. So they need to be careful about that, and therefore in that sense they're also compared to the sky, where in other words they're able to look into the truth of the matter and figure it out. Here also Ian Yaakov says again, the point is, don't start second guessing them either. When you have Gabor Tzedakah, who are known to be honest and to do the job reliably, then don't start second guessing them and think that you know better and that maybe they're not so honest, etc. The same way as you can't look above the Rakia, that's above the Chayes HaKadosh. Then, according to this explanation, when we say those who bring righteousness to the many will be like the stars forever and ever, that refers to melamdim of children. So they're matzdikei harabim because they teach them, they're mechanech them in the right way, and therefore they're called matzdikei harabim. They're the ones who bring tzedakah and righteousness and tzidkus to the many. So why are they compared to, first of all, Tosfos points out that evidently from this, based on this Gemara, by comparison with this Gemara and one in Pesachim, it seems that on the face of it, shouldn't we think the sky itself is not that bright? The stars are very bright. So wouldn't that mean the stars, in this case, the Malam de Tinoikas, are greater than the Dayonim and the Gabar Tzedakah? But there's a Gemara in Pesachim that seems to imply otherwise. So Tosfos brings that actually the Rakia, so again, one explanation is the Rakia over here we're talking about is the one, al-Rosh HaChayis, above the heads of the Chayis, which is extremely bright, but elsewhere, in fact, Tosfos says, in Pesachim, that in fact, in general, the glow of the Rakia is actually greater than the glow of the stars. The Ran in Pesachim mentions the point that actually, like this, you think about it, where does the glow come from? It comes from the stars, and ultimately it all comes from the glow of the sun. Everything else that we see in the sky is basically a reflection of that. Well, you don't see it in the sky, in the atmosphere so much. Why? Because it just passes through the atmosphere without being reflected. It comes onto the stars and the planets and the whatnot, and it reflects off them because they're made, of course, through material. So therefore, in that sense, the Rakia actually has more energy in it than do the stars and planets and whatnot. It's actually easier to understand even with modern science. You have a lot more radiation of all kinds of wavelengths of radiation that pass through space and are not absorbed, whereas then they bounce off some heavenly body and they bounce off it. So therefore, in that sense, the Rakia is actually greater than the stars. With that said, another way of looking at it is indeed we're saying there might be a way to say that the Malam de Tinoikas, in the sense that they're the ones who are Machanech the next generation, they in a way are greater than the Dayanim. I saw something brought from the famous Sfardish Rav Rebbetzin Abba Shol, that he would tell younger lights who have a choice of going into Dayanus or into Malamdus, he would tell them, go become Malamdim. You'll raise the next generation that way. That's in a way greater than being Dayanim. So what's the comparison to stars? So again, there's a lot of different explanations. Again, Maharsha points out the stars are always there, but you don't see them by day, you only see them by night. So the point is, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, a good dedicated Malamed, even when he's not actually physically present with the students, he still has a hashpa on them, as the Gemara is now going to tell about Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas. And there's a lot of other different explanations. There's an idea that stars are very large. Some of them are even larger than the sun, but they look tiny to us because they're so far away. So people don't always appreciate Malamdim. They tend to look down on them, Oishmara Malamed, but really they're greater than many others that we can think of. Again, they continue to have ashpa long after they've been mechanech the children, just as the stars, the light that we see from the stars, some of them, it left them hundreds of years ago, and we're first getting that light now, in the same way a good melamed continues to have ashpa that extends lifetimes later. Another point is also that Maharaj Chayas has a long explanation tying all these things in the Gemara here together, and he explains that one point is that the stars, so again, you have, we see them as tiny little pinpoints of light, meaning that a lot of the light of them, a lot of the energy from them doesn't reach us because it gets absorbed by the atmosphere, it gets hidden from us. The same way, a good Melamed, he knows a lot, but he knows exactly how to be mitzamtzem and give over only as much as his students are going to be able to absorb so as not to overwhelm them, as opposed to, the Gemara is going to go on to say, the Talmidei Chachamim, the Gemara is going to explain soon, like the sun, because they taka have a responsibility to teach as much as they can to, they're talking to adults, they're talking to the Kehillah at large, they can give over as much as they know and not have to be mitzamtzim it, because that's their job, is to teach the rabbim, as opposed to a Malamed Tinoikas has to be careful to not overwhelm the Talmidim. So the Gemara says, Kegoin Man, what's an example of a teacher like that, of a Melamed who can be compared to the stars? Amar Rav Kegoin Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas. So Rav says, I'll give you an example, Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas. So he was one of the Amoraim, but we see over here he was a Melamed as well. It's brought that he was actually a descendant of Haman. The Gemara says elsewhere that there were descendants of Haman who taught Torah, and it's identified that that was this Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas. Yeah. I always imagine that in his class when he's teaching them before Purim, it must have been quite a lot of fun. But yeah, in any case, there's actually an interesting vote on that brought in Kisrei HaRizal, that there's something in connection with the war against Sisera. The pasuk says that the stars fought against Sisera, Kechavim Mim Siloisam, and it's brought over there that there's a connection between, there's a deep connection, with Haman over there, the psukim of the pasuk over there, Kechavim Mim Siloisam Nuchamu, is Rosh HaTevis Haman, from whom, as we're saying, Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas descend, and therefore it's very appropriate that he is a Melamed who's compared to the stars that fought against Sisera hundreds of years earlier. So it's all tied together. Anyway, so what happened? The Rav Ashkeshel of Shmuel Bar Shilas, Davakoy Beginsay. One time he sees Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas and he's standing in his garden. Omalei, so he asks him, Shavki lahim, Shavakte lahim unusach, have you abandoned your faithfulness? You've always been teaching the Talmidim very dedicated and you're always with them, and now all of a sudden you're standing in your garden over here. What happened to the Kinderlach? Rabbi Gershom on the Gemara over here explains. He's saying basically, like, have you retired? Amalei, so Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas says no. It's 13 years now that I haven't seen this garden. He was so dedicated to his Talmidim that for 13 years he never even had a chance to visit his garden. Even now, my mind is on them. I'm still thinking about them, or some Mephoshim explain me, I'm watching them from here, from the garden. I'm not just tending to my garden. I'm actually looking also through the cheder window at them. So this is an example of a really dedicated Melamed who they were saying that he can be compared to the stars in the effect that he has on the Talmidim. And it means, in other words, that his having them in mind, taka has an effect on them. You have the same way as, for example, it talks about that a Rebbe's thought has a hashpah on his Talmidim. The very beginning of Lakuta Diburim, the first words are in it that the Friedrich Rebbe begins a sicha in Tafresh Tzadik Gimel, Machshava Me'elas. Machshava is effective. When the Rebbe thinks about a chassid, it has an effect on him. And he goes on that there's one of the chassidim who was there at the Sabrengen asked the Friedrich Rebbe, you know, do we have an example of this? And the Friedrich Rebbe says, yeah, think of where you were last year. A year earlier, this chassid had been stuck in Russia, and thanks to the Friedrich Rebbe's machshava, he was unable to get out of there. So in the same way, Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas says machshava on his Talmidim has an effect on them, even though they may not realize it yet. So the Gemara says, I think I once saw an explanation also, I don't remember the source, that when he says 13 years I haven't seen them, he means a previous generation of his Talmidim, that 13 years they've already graduated, 13 years ago they already graduated from my class, but I'm still thinking about them even now. So the Gemara says, V'rabbanan mai. Now so far we've been talking about the Gaboi Tzedakah and the Dayonim and the Melamdim. What about the Rabbanan, the Talmid Chachamim, who are constantly learning Torah? To what heavenly body can we compare them to? Amar Ravina, so Ravina says about them is what the pasuk says, a different pasuk. V'oyhavav k'tseis Hashemesh b'gvurasei, those who love Hashem are like the sun when it comes forth in its full strength. So they're greater than all the other ones we said so far. The Ritzvah refers over here to the point that Begurosa means not just the strength of the sun now, but the strength that it'll have, La'osid Lavoi, where as we say in Kiddush Levanah, Va'arachama, Yeshiva Sayim, that the light of the sun will be 343 times, 7 times 7 times 7, more intense than it is now. And that's the kind of strength, that's the kind of energy that we're talking about, that Abbanon, that the full-time Talmid HaChamim, are zoicha to. So that's, yeah, we're talking about that at last, that Lava Hashem will take the sheath off the sun, yeah. Yeah, so therefore it'll be much more intense than it is now, right? The expression we say is that Shiv Asayim means 7 times 7, because it means 2 sevens. So 7 times 7, Ka'or Shiv Asayim, like the total amount of light that came from the sun during the 7 days of creation. It's all going to be compressed into one, basically. So therefore you have 7 times 7 times 7, which equals 343. So the Talmid Chachamim are zoicha to that, that their energy illuminates the entire world, even more so than all the groups that we were talking about until now. Okay, getting back to Gaboi Tzedaka, the Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanan, Gaboi Tzedaka, Ein Rashoin Lifrish Zeh Mizeh. The Gaboi Tzedaka, now we learned yesterday, there always have to be a minimum of two. They're not allowed to separate one from another, because again, you always have to have two when they're going around collecting Tzedaka. Now they can separate temporarily. The idea they shouldn't separate from one another, Rashi explains, is because of chashad. When you see one, like when they see one person alone collecting, then people may think that he plans to steal and keep some of the money for himself. But they can have temporarily, one of them is going to go to the gate, and the other one is going to, where often you have vendors over there who are sitting, vendors or passers-by or whatever, who are sitting in the gate, and other people are have stores nearby, and they're going to separate. So this way, in other words, it's still obvious that they're still working as a team, but they're splitting up for a couple of minutes to go to different stores in the same shopping center, let's say, or whatever. So that they're allowed to do. Matzah mois b'shuk. Suppose a gabbai tzedakah finds money in the street. Lo yitnim b'soich kisoi, he should not put it into his own purse. Because again, people are going to suspect that he might be taking the tzedakah money for himself. We know there's a general rule, v'yisim nekiyim, me'ashem o'mi'yisrael, your person always has to act in a way that's above board, not only in the Eidishter's eyes, but in the eyes of people. So he shouldn't put the money into his own private purse, elam noisim b'soich arnaki shal tzedakah, he puts it into the tzedakah purse that he's carrying, u'l'chshiyavi l'beitza yitlim, when he keeps in mind how much it was, and when he gets home, then when he's counting out the tzedakah money, then he takes that amount and keeps it for himself. Hayotzeboy, in a similar vein, hoya noshe b'chaveri mona, suppose that somebody owed him a mona, or proy b'shuk, and the other fellow paid him in the street, lo yitnim b'soich kisoi, same thing, he shouldn't put it into his own wallet, because again, people are not going to realize that this is paying back a personal loan that he gave the guy, they're going to think that he's keeping the money for himself, elam noshe b'soich, amniki shol tzedakah, same idea, he should put it into the tzedakah purse, uchshiyavi l'beisoi, when he gets home, yiflin, then he takes it out of there and puts it in his own. The Gemara continues, Tanan Rabbanan, another din about Gaboi Tzedakah. Gaboi Tzedakah she'ein lahem aniyim l'chalek. Suppose right now there aren't any poor people available to give the money to. Now, the problem is that, I'm sure many Gaboi Tzedakah wish that they had such problems. But anyway, the point is, back then, when what they collected was coins, this is long before paper money, let alone credit cards or anything like that, so you have coins, and coins tend to corrode and rust after a while. So if they keep that money for a meshach zman, then they're going to have rusty coins, which are not so good to give to the poor people. So what should they do? Pertin la'acherim, they can exchange the money for prutus to others. They ain't pertin la'asman, but not for themselves. So let's say, for example, they collected from different people, and now they have 100 pennies. So now they want to convert it to a dollar, which is easier to keep around, let's say. So they shouldn't do it for themselves, because again, people may think that they did it cheaply for themselves. People may think, let's say, for example, that they found there were only 95 cents there, and they decided, you know what, we'll round it up and we'll take a dollar for ourselves. So they have to do it only to other people, again, in order to avoid that kind of chashad. Similarly, Gaboy Tamkhoi. Similarly, the collectors of the Tamkhoi, as we talked about yesterday, the Tamkhoi is that they would go around every day in some places and collect actual food to give to the Aniyim. We said they would do that every day in places, as we talked about yesterday. The Rambam says not every Jewish community that we know of has a Kupa Shel Tzedakah. Not everyone has a Tamkhoi. Sometimes, some places they do, some they don't. So Gaboy Tamchui, the same way, when they're collecting for the Tamchui, for the collection of food, She'en Lamaniyim L'chalik, if right now there are no poor people to give out the food to, Moichrin La'acherim, they can sell the food to others, Ve'en Moichrin La'atzman, but they can't sell it to themselves. Again, they can't figure, well, this food is worth a total of $10, so fine, we'll keep the food for ourselves, and we'll put $10 into the Tamchui fund, because again, people may suspect them that it was really $12 worth, that it was really, let's say, $8 worth of food. And they're taking for themselves 10 or whatever.
What did they do?
Or the other way around, $12 worth of food and taking for them. Yeah. What
did they do with the money?
They set it aside until eventually they'll use it. We learned yesterday that the Gaboy Tzedakah are entitled to, they're entitled to exchange things. They can decide this food, this money that we collected for the Kupa should go for the Tamchoy or vice versa. So if it happens for a Meshach Man, there's no poor people, then they may do that. The money that they collected, the money that they use now from selling the Tamchoy food, they'll put it into another Tzedakah fund. And another din about the Gaboy Tzedakah, Mois Shol Tzedakah, and Moinosim Shtayim Shtayim, Ela Achas Achas. When they're counting up the coins, they should not count them two at a time, only one at a time. Again, Rashi says the reason is Chashad, because you don't want people to think that he's taking two and counting them as only one, and therefore giving himself a discount. Rabbeinu Gershom actually says in his Pirush over here that means specifically when we're talking about this pertin, that when they have to exchange the money for other coins, for example, so it'll last longer, then they have to be careful to count it out one by one so that there are no mistakes, so that they don't accidentally give the other person more than he's supposed to and get back for the tzedakah fund less. So in other words, it comes out of coin to him. Normally, there's not a problem of counting the coins two by two, only specifically when you're doing that kind of thing, exchanging it for other denominations. Okay. Now, so here on the one hand, we've been saying that the Gaboy Tzedakah have to keep themselves very carefully above suspicion, and we're saying various things that they have to do or not do in order that there shouldn't be the slightest trace of it. Well, now we have kind of the other way around. Tana Rabbanan, Ein Mechashin B'Tzedakah Im Gaboy Tzedakah. When it comes to collecting tzedakah, we don't demand from them an accounting. We don't demand from them that you have to show us where all the money you collected went. They're trustworthy people, and we have to be able to trust them. That's what we were saying before. From Ion Yaakov, that's one reason they're compared to the Rakia above the Rosh Achayas. There comes a point beyond which you don't. Obviously, if you find there's something not quite right, then that's different. But as long as they have a chazaka being trustworthy, then you trust them and you don't demand from them an accounting. And the same way, when it comes to Hektish, you don't demand that the Gizborim, the treasurers of the Bes Mikdash, who are responsible for all the time, they're collecting people's Hekdashis and Erchin and Charomim and all kinds of other things like that. Again, you don't demand from them an accounting of where it all went. Now, even though there's not a solid proof for that, Zeicha L'Dover, there's a hint to that in a Pasuk. Shenema, the Pasuk describes, and when King Yehoyash was renovating, was ordered that the Bes Mikdash should be renovated. We read it as after a Parshas Shkalim. So at first the deal was that the Kohenim are supposed to collect money from the people and they'll bring it to Hekdesh, but they didn't want to. So eventually, Yehoyada HaKohen set up a pushka in the Bes Mikdash. The Pasuk describes he took a box. Cut a hole in the door, and people would come and put their tzedakah and their hektish money in there. So it was a pushka, basically. So then the pasuk describes, then they would take out the money and give it to the people who are in charge of overseeing the work. And the pasuk says, "V'lo yechashvu as anoshim asher yitnu as hakesef al yadam." They did not demand an accounting from the people to whom they gave the money. Losses for oisam malacha, where in turn those people are giving it to the actual workers. Kiva emuna heim oisim. They're acting. They're working. That's what we said. There's no raya for it, but there's a zecha because of this pasuk. Kiva emuna heim oisim. They're doing it in a trustworthy way. So we see, in other words, that we didn't ask them for an accounting. So there's a zecher for the idea that we shouldn't do that by gaboy tzedakah. Now Rashi explains it's not a solid raya because there we're not talking about they're not collecting tzedakah. There we're talking about hekdesh. Now the point is when it comes to hekdesh, when it comes to the renovation of this mikdash, there are a lot of different workers that they need. They need stonemasons and they need woodcutters and they need this and that and the other, and therefore it would be very hard to keep such an accurate accounting, and therefore that would be a reason why they didn't ask it of them. That doesn't necessarily follow that when it comes to in other times when the Gizvarim are not dealing with a whole bunch of different contractors, or when it comes to the Gaboy Tzedakah who are not necessarily dealing with contractors at all, that we shouldn't ask them for an accounting. So you don't have a solid proof from the sponsor, but okay, you have a Zecher for it. That's the point of Rashi.
Probably no one would want to be a Gizbar if you'd have to make an accounting.
Maybe, I don't know. Let's say, for example, you have a concept, for example, the Gemara in Gittin talks a lot about, for example, apotropsin for a Yosem. You have Yosemin, their father. Hold on. It's not so different. The fact is they're also accomplishing a mitzvah. They're managing the Yosemin's estate. And at the end, we demand from them a full accounting. And we actually even many times make them take a shvua that they were completely honest. You're going to say nobody is going to want to be an apotropos for Yosemin either. Nevertheless, you can find people who will step up and be willing to do it because of mitzvah. So the pashtus over here also with gizborim and gaboy tzedakah, even if we demanded an accounting, it's not like necessarily fine. It would scare some people off, sure, but there would be people who would still be willing to do it because of the mitzvah. Okay. Nevertheless, we're saying that the zecher from the pasuk is that we don't demand that.
Rambam says that if they're suspected, like they take lots of money goes into buying.
Yeah, obviously, if we see
it. For sure they're making an accounting.
Yeah, fine. But then we're talking about even a regular apotropos, even if we don't see that he seems to be mismanaging the money. Nevertheless, the fact is, at the end, we do demand when the Yisroelim are grown up, Beis Din is going to demand a full accounting from him. So according to Rashi, the vote is it's not a solid proof because they didn't ask them for a cheshbon because of the practicality of it. It would be impossible to keep track when there are so many workers and so many different contractors in different fields that are doing work in the Beis Mikdash. Tosfos says a different answer is because they were tzaddikim gemurim. So fine, when they're tzaddikim gemurim, sure, you don't need an accounting from them. It would be almost al derech, like, you know, you think of it, like, you know, people would give money to the Rebbe all the time. You had Maimed and you had the various machnes. Machne Yisrael guys and whatever. You think they ever went to the Rebbe and demanded a form 900 or whatever, you know, whatever the equivalent is. We're talking about them asking the Rebbe. So therefore, that's another reason it's not really a solid proof. So in other words, Marsha says the flow of the pasuk is that we're saying they didn't ask them for an account. Why? Because their munahem osim, the navi who's writing this nevuah testifies on them. Ki ben munahem osim, they are honest people. They're above suspicion. But that doesn't show that in later times, you're talking about regular gaboy tzedakah or regular gizvarim, that you shouldn't have to ask for accounting. That would be it's a zecher for that. It's only a zecher for that. Okay. In this connection, though. If a person has a trustee who's taking care of matters in his house, who's taking care of his finances, even if the guy is trustworthy, nevertheless he should bundle up and count the money that he's giving to him. So fine, even he's not going to demand an accounting for him, but at least he should first bundle up the money and give it to him, and only then give it to him to work with. Marsha points out an interesting point. The Gemara mentions in Chulin that when you have something that's tied up or bundled up, then Mazikin are not able to get into it. Therefore, that's a good reason to bundle up the money so that Mazikin and other harmful forces cannot get to that money, and therefore it'll be safe in the hands of your gizbar, of your trustee, and he'll be able to manage your money well. Shenema, as the pasuk says, by these people who were overseeing the work in the Beis Mikdash, vayatsuru vayimnu, they bundled up the money and they counted it up and then they gave it to the people in charge. Okay. More on the dinim of tzedakah. The Gemara says, Omer Rav Huna, boidkin l'mezonis v'ein boidkin l'ksus. If a poor person comes to us asking for food, we have to check into him first. We have to make sure that he's not a dishonest person who is just pretending to be poor. Now, the Yad Ramah points out, it doesn't mean we're going to let him starve meanwhile. It just means, in other words, fine. We'll give him something to tide him over at the moment, but we want to set up for him a general thing. We're going to give you X amount of food per week. Says Rav Huna, we have to carefully check into it first, make sure he really is poor. The in Bird Kimaksus, However, if he comes with tattered clothing, Rashi says Orum, but Orum doesn't necessarily have to be naked. Means like underdressed. And he says, I need clothing. Then we get clothing for him right away. And we don't need, the invoid can look close. We don't need to check into it and make sure that he's honest. Why? I can bring you a posuk for that, or I can bring you a svara. Because the one who's not dressed properly is in a state of bizoyan. He's not naked, but half so. So it's a bizoyan, and therefore we got to get him clothed right away. The one who's hungry, okay, you know, he's not starving on the verge of death or something. He's not such a bizoyan, so therefore we have time to check into the matter. Or you could say it's based on a pasuk. The pasuk says in Yeshaya, "Haloi fores l'roiv lachmecha." Shouldn't you be breaking your bread to give to the hungry? Now, b'shin ksiv. Now, the pasuk when it says "Haloi fores" in the pasuk, it's written with a shin. In which case, we can darshan poroish, check into it, investigate into it, meloshin pirush v'hoder havle, and only then give him. Now. Marsha points out that actually, that Marsha, and there's a note on the bottom over here on the page that points out, if you look in a, if you open up a Tanakh and then turn to this Perek in Yeshaya, it's Perek Nunches of Yeshaya, we also read it as the Haftarah on Yom Kippur morning, we will in fact find that in the Pasuk it is spelt with a sin, with a Samach. If it was spelt with a sin, Mela, we could douch in it as a Shin, as the Gemara often does, but it is in fact spelt in the Pasuk with a Samach. So Marsha says that, that it can mean that, fine, but we read it as though it was with a sin, and because after all, a sin and a samach sound the same, and therefore we can darshan it as a shin, and therefore we can darshan it orosh, look into it. On the other hand, Tosfos elsewhere points out that we seem to find, we've talked about this in this shiur before, we seem to find quite a number of places in Shas where it seems that the Gemara had a different mesorah of how certain words are written or pronounced in Tanakh than we have. And in that case, this Gemara might be one of those examples where maybe in their Masorda, they actually had the pasuk written with a sin, whereas we have it with a samach.
That's a pasuk for a mazonit, but where's the pasuk for a kasot?
Hold on, we're going to quote that in a second. But one point is, I've mentioned before, we find in books on the Masorda, we find there were two major groups of Balei Masorda, the Marvoi and Madinchoi. Marvoi means the Westerners, meaning the ones from Eretz Yisrael. Madinchoi means the Easterners from Babel. There's a lot of places in Tanakh where they had slight differences in the Masorda between them. Generally speaking, we follow the Marvoi, the ones in Eretz Yisrael, because we consider them to have been the greater experts. They're also the ones who first wrote down the Nekudas and Terup as we use them, among others. So on the other hand, the Gemara, after all, the Gemara Bavli was written in Babel, so it's very possible that they followed the Madinchoi, and this might be one of those differences. Anyway, so that's as far as food. So we see that you have to first investigate and only then give him. V'hosim ksiv, on the other hand, when it comes to clothing, this is a pasuk says, kisira orem v'chisisai. The pasuk says, when you see a person who is naked, you should cover him, implying, kisira la'alter. As soon as you see him, cover him, give him food. So we see that the pasuk is telling us that the pasuk is making that distinction for us.
Is that with Noah, or where is it?
It's all a pasuk in Yeshaya, and in Yeshaya, kapitel nunches. Oh. As I said, we read it as the Haftarah, Yom Kippur morning. That's one opinion. Rabbi Yehuda says the other way around. Boikin l'ksus vein, boikin l'mazonis. The guy comes and says, I need clothing. We have to first check whether he's an honest person or whether he's just pretending to be poor. But in boikin l'mazonis, but when it comes to giving him food, Rabbi Yehuda says, on the contrary, you don't need to check into it. You can give him right away. Again, boikin l'krov, boikin l'svara. Rabbi Yehuda also says, I have a pasuk and I have a svara to back up my opinion. The one who's hungry is suffering right now from hunger. The one who's underdressed, okay, but he's not suffering from it right now. But Pashtus, we're not talking about, you know, it's 30 below zero and he doesn't have proper clothing. We're just talking about, you know, he doesn't have a decent coat, let's say, or whatever. So he's a little cold, but he's not in such sire. Or we can say the positive. When it comes to food, the Navi is saying, break your bread for the hungry, implying poros for alter, implying break and give him some of your food right away. And after all, even if we're going to talk about, even if it's written with a shin or a sin, as we just said, the fact is we definitely read it with a samach, which means to break. Like as you have, the word for breaking bread is parah. Parah, yeah, thank you. Right? I couldn't think of the word. Thank you. But when it says, when you see the naked, you should cover him, doesn't mean like Rav Huna says, as soon as you see him. When it's seen to you, when you check into the matter, and you see, and you find that it really is truly that he needs clothing. Well, the Gemara says, Tanya Kavaseid Rabbi Yehuda. We learn a Braisa like Rabbi Yehuda's version. Omer Kasuni, if a person says that I need clothing, Bod Kenachrav, we check into it first, make sure that he's not faking it. Kanesuni, but if he says, give me food, Ein Bod Ken, then we know to check in. We can right away start offering him food.
So we go according to Rabbi
Yehuda. Because the Braisa backs him up.
It makes sense?
Yeah. Now, either one makes sense. They're both logical. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tanya, and we learn in a Braisa, if we're talking about a poor person who's going around from door to door, then they don't need to give him money from the kupa, because, in other words, the kupa is primarily meant for poor people who are too, they're not used to being poor, or whatever it is, they're too embarrassed to go around and beg people for tzedakah. So the kupa is for them. As opposed to when you have a person who anyway goes from door to door, so therefore the Gabbai Tzedakah are not responsible to give him from the Kupa Shal Tzedakah. Go ahead, continue asking for Nedavos from individuals. So the Gemara tells, Ahu Anya to have a Machazer al Psochim, there was once such a poor person, he was going around from door to door, and the Osama Kameh did a Papa, and he came to the Papa, who was the local Gabbai Tzedakah, or one of the two local Gabbai Tzedakah, Loi Mizdi Kiklei, and the Papa did not give him anything, even as far as Parnasa. Whatever it is, you can go and then beg from door to door. The parnosa would mean to set up a fund for money for him. The marshal has a girsa and said leprusa, even to give him a small amount of food. Omelet of Sama Breder of Yeva or a papa, but of Sama Breder of Yeva says e marlam is dakikla. Yeah, but if you don't. But if you don't get involved with him at all, and you don't give him from his kupa in a shachrinolam is zakeklay, then nobody else is necessarily going to bother to either. They're going to think maybe he's not worthy of zaka. Lemus, should the guy die? You have to give him something. No. So Tosfos explains, in other words, that again, you don't give him from the kupa, as we just said in the Braisa. But still, if you don't even give him the amount he needs for a suda, then other people aren't going to give him at all. So you have to give him, you have to give him something, no? Mao Shor expands on it, in other words, that the fact is, yeah, the guy's going around door to door, but that means, in other words, each person is giving him some amount. Rapapa doesn't want to give him from the kupa, like we said, but now other people may not know that he's not getting from the kupa. They're gonna think he got from the kupa, and we don't have to give him. So then he's gonna be caught between two. He's gonna fall through the cracks over here. Amalei sort of papa says, yeah, but what's the problem? Vatanya, didn't we say should the guy die? So Papa says, didn't we just say that if he's going around door to door, then we, the Gaboi Tzedakah, don't have to deal with him? Amalei, so Rabbi Sama says, Eniskokin loy matana meruba, means we don't have to give him a significant amount. For that, he can ask door to door. But we have to give him at least a little bit from the kupa. So again, according to Tosfos, that would mean, in other words, at least give him an amount for, so to say, fine, you don't have to give him a full suda, I know. You don't have to give him a full suda, but at least you have to give him something. According to Marashah, the vote is also, give him a little bit from the kupa, and that will make people realize that they also have to supplement and they have to give him from their own, and that way he won't fall through the cracks. This is all an example. We said before, the Gabbai Tzedakah are maskil adol. A person has to think carefully. A Gabbai Tzedakah has to think carefully what the poor people need and how to do it in the most effective way. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Chavdal and Tevis, the Alter Rebbe is Yom Hilula. We started talking about yesterday, the Alter Rebbe brings in Torah Ur, that La'osid Lovei, we will say Shemin Esrei out loud. And so the Rebbe talks about Nesicha, how is that? If Shemin Esrei is supposed to be the concept of Bittul, and that is why we whisper it, how could it ever be that we're going to say it out loud? So the answer is, La'osid Lovei, we'll have the ultimate degree of bittul. There'll be v'ro kolbosa yachdav, v'nigra kvodavaya v'ro kolbosa yachdav. All flesh will see alakos. That flesh, our fleshly eyes, will see alakos. Meaning that the whole metzios will evince the fact that einoi, there's no other metzios except the edishter. And by us Jewish people will be clearly revealed that Yisrael v'kodesh b'ruchu kol achad, that our metzios itself is atzmos. As you have the expression, man malchi rabbanon, who are the true kings, the rabbanon, meaning that their metzios themselves is a king. increasingly metzius. So at that point, then we will have the ultimate degree of bittul in tefillah, and therefore it can be b'kol ram, meaning that at that point the mila of bittul will be revealed. Right now, we don't fully understand, we can't fully achieve bittul. Therefore, it has to be quiet. But la sidlava, it will actually be revealed openly. Therefore, that bittul can be expressed out loud, and we will say Shemoneh Esrei out loud.
Even when there's a minyan.
We're talking about every person when he davens his own Shemoneh Esrei.
They'll be doing that loud?
No. We don't mean they're going to be yelling. We just mean they're going to be doing it in a normal voice like the rest of davening, not whispering.
So what's to prevent from doing it now?
Because now we don't. Now the Chacham made the Takana to say Balachash, which represents Bittul. But we don't have the complete degree of Bittul nowadays. But also lovely, we don't. We started learning in Hilchos and Tfilas Yadayim about a person was awake all night and he should wash in the morning. The Alter Rebbe says without a bracha. We mentioned there's a letter where the Rebbe says that a hirah b'chashai was to say a bracha in that case. Now, suppose a person wakes up before Alos HaShachar and washes. It's good. It's proper for him to again wash three times when day breaks, by Alos HaShachar. So he woke up before Alos HaShachar, then he should, or at sunrise, at Netzach Hama, he should wash again. Because, again, what the various reasons that we learned in this simon about why we wash our hands in the morning, one possibility is that night itself causes that ruach ra will rest on the hands even without sleeping. In a similar vein, the Gemara talks about the question, for example, for Kohen, who gets up early in the morning to do the avodah, does he have to do kiddush adayim raglayim when it comes time for that day's avodah? So now, what would happen? A person then got up. A person got up before Alois HaShachar and washed, and then was saying he should wash again after Netzach Hama. Now, if he goes to sleep afterwards for a while, then definitely, no question, a Ruach Ra rests on his hands, and therefore he's going to have to definitely wash when he gets up. Nevertheless, he doesn't make a bracha on that Netzach Sedayim. Because the bracha is only when it becomes a beria chadasha, and now when a person slept afterwards again, then he didn't become a beria chadasha because a person becomes a beria chadasha, a newly created being, only once a day, not twice. So therefore, in other words, the person should wash negovaser after he gets up from sleep, but only once a day is he going to make a bracha on it. The same thing is true as moida'ani. Although some people sometimes do it a second time as well. So even if a person takes a nap during the day, if it's long enough, then we'll learn tomorrow that also he should wash for that as well.
Does he wash in the middle of the night also?
So what we're saying is if a person wakes up before Alos HaShachar and washes, and then he's going to go back to sleep, then when he wakes up later on, he should wash again. Or if he's still up by Netzach Hama, then he should wash again, is what we're saying. Right.